Hi folks, a small bit of housekeeping before we start the pod. As you may know, these pods rely on listeners' support. We continue to be pushing and trying to get you voices of people you won't hear from. But in order to keep it going, we need support. With a mind to that, we will be doing some more Patreon-only content. And if you want to avail of that, please come over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It will help us keep delivering the pods, and it will give us, look, we're simply not viable without your support. More importantly, Rory Hearn, the host of the Reboot Republic podcast, is running for the Shannon in the NUI panel. You can get information for that on roryhearn.ie. Rory, as you know, obviously is a good friend of ours, and we're quite biased on that, but he would be a great advocate for the right to housing, for fighting for equal pay, fighting for to tackle inequality, and he's a long-term activist, and I have to be honest with you, he's one of the most sincere and genuine people I've ever met. So maybe head over to roryhearn.ie, have a look at his GoFundMe. He could do with some support. Also, check out Rachel's newest podcast on Disturbing the Peace. It is on living with bipolar, and it's really fantastic. I have to say it helped me put a lot of things in context. What you're going to hear now is our conversation with Jacob Wolf and around the recent controversy around anti-Semitic comments and the global phenomenon of seeing it weaponized and what it is and what it isn't. And I have to say it was one of my favorite episodes we've done. Talk to you all soon. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we are talking anti-Semitism. As always, I'm joined by my co-host Martin McMahon. But Martin, this is a subject that we don't really need to make jokes about, and we don't really want to make jokes about. So we'll just get straight into it. We are delighted to be joined by Jacob Wolf. Jacob is a student and who has aspirations, I believe is a fair way of putting it, Jacob, of doing a PhD on anti-Semitism. And it's fair to say you've written about it and you've a much better understanding than we do. There's only one place. First of all, thanks for coming over to join us.
You're very, very welcome. Shabbat shalom, everyone. It's Friday. Nice. You don't have to worry about thanking me for joining you, maybe because if this was work to me, you would be against halakha anyway. I just realized no one's going to get my Jewish jokes. But yeah, essentially it's Shabbat, Friday evening to next day, Sunday. It's supposed to be the Jewish day of rest.
I think everybody will get it who has watched The Big Lebowski. there was the whole we don't bowl on Shomer Shabbos. Wasn't that what he kept shouting?
He calls me the Little Lebowski, by the way.
you're not even Jewish. Your wife was Jewish. Yeah. I converted when I married her.
Jacob, listen, thank you so much for coming over. I suppose there's only one place to start straight off. What is anti-Semitism?
That's a great question. So I'll answer it the best I can. First off, I'd like to make clear there is no universally agreed definition of anti-Semitism. I think the closest thing we have is the IHRA, that's an International Holocaust Remembrance Association, who have a definition, but even then there's areas you could quibble at that. It's not that. So anyone who tells you there is a universally agreed definition isn't. But why talk about anti-Semitism specifically? First off, anti-Semitism, I think a good place to start is that it's different from other forms of racism, which try to degrade, dehumanize, and break down people. With anti-Semitism, the charge is always about raising Jewish power to these like fantastic astronomical heights, which of course also leaves a lot of room for vagueness. Vagueness for interpretation, and sometimes for accidentally slipping into the dialogue. So it's more like Deborah Lipstadt, a scholar of anti-Semitism, has argued that you should just say Jew hate. She's a scholar who's done a lot of respected work, but I would more take the Hannah Arendt position that it's worthwhile to make a differentiation between just like dislike, prejudice against Jewish people and anti-Semitism, which is effectively an entire ideology, ideology that posits Jews as this incredibly powerful, centralized group of people who are all, connected to each other, all out for their own, gain, and all seeking to empower themselves at the detriment of everyone else.
In essence, that speaks to what we hear about the conspiracy. There's always, you know, and there are these terms, and we had this conversation before we came on air where we said that people will say things and not even realize that they're being anti-Semitic, where they'll use terms like globalist, they'll talk about a cabal, they'll talk about,
Rothschilds, you know, bankers. Yeah. I mean, we all know what the tropes are. They're all there.
No, but we don't though, Martin. That's just it. Many people don't realize it even when they're saying, as you say, you would think that these people are, there's a secret group that run the world. There's the Bilderbergs, the Rothschilds, there's all of these groups. And, you know, it's, all of that has its origins in, I suppose it brings to the second question then. Why is it important that this is anti-Semitic then? You know, or why is it called that?
Why is it called that? That's a good question as well. Like, the word anti-Semitism, I think, can be a little misleading because Semitism or Semites are this, like, very vague, broad group of people. But actually, that word is kind of similar to the other words, like globalist you mentioned there, in that its origins is literally to differentiate itself from Jew hate or Judeophobia, where people would say, "Oh, I'm not anti-Jewish. I'm just anti-Semitic," and it became popularized and eventually just became the word for prejudice or hatred against Jews. And there was at one point a strong effort to make Judeophobia a thing, but now we're just kind of stuck with this, which is why today a lot of scholars prefer to use the unhyphenated one, just one word to make it clear this isn't prejudice against this vague, undefined group. This is its own thing. And I think it's important to get that point because it's still something I see from, like, people on the left and anti-racist campaigners will sometimes, when they're accused of it, say, "Oh, anti-Semitism is just, it doesn't mean anything. It's just as, like, it's like, you know, other people are Semites too." Like, no, sorry. That's the word for it first. Like, it's similar to Islamophobia, I guess, where the word isn't really perfect. And you have people saying stupid things like, "Oh, it's not real because Islam isn't a race," as if that, like, somehow erases the very real racism and prejudice Muslim or even just, like, anyone vaguely brown faces from that. So I think that's a good point to make.
Yeah, is anti-Semitic the term you would prefer everybody use, or is that the term that people that's the term that has become to be accepted to be the correct term to use?
I think it's just a word we're stuck with now, and to be honest, I don't think there's really anything you can do about it. Like I said, other people will argue that we should just say Jew hate, but I feel that if there is a use in anti-Semitism in differentiation from Jew hate, it's that it describes almost entirely worldview and ideology. Like I said, Hannah Arendt argued for this, that you should differentiate between Jew hate and the whole ideology of anti-Semitism, which can come to completely dominate your, like, worldview and how you process any and all information.
Is there, can you differentiate it again between criticism of the nation of Israel?
Oh boy, we're into that already, are we?
but can we make that differentiation again, or is it too difficult an area to make that differentiation?
Well, rather than think of, like, criticizing Israel and standing up for justice in Palestine and being aware of anti-Semitism, being against anti-Semitism, I think it's a mistake to think of these things as in conflict. I think a much better way that your listeners can think about it is that, look, I'm someone who believes in justice, who believes in equality, and who believes in fighting prejudice, and that therefore you should incorporate the needs to combat anti-Semitism into that general struggle. I mean, it's also, if you're involved in, say, Palestinian activism, I think it's in your best interest to educate yourself about anti-Semitism so that you don't slip up and have these accusations made against you. Just a simple fact that if you're an anti-racist, you should want to combat anti-Semitism on principle. You know, you should already be on side. But you know, if you're involved in specifically Palestinian justice issues, I think it's also in your best interest for the reason number one that you won't fall into these rhetorical trappings and accidentally further anti-Semitism while you're criticizing it at all, because like obviously you don't want to do that. You don't want to be accidentally be spreading conspiracies, and also the simple fact that like there's an inverse relationship between the argument for Israel continuing to exist in the state it does, and the amount of global anti-Semitism. Like the more anti-Semitism there is in the world, the stronger the case for Israel staying the way it is the way it is currently.
That's a very good point. I hadn't really thought of it in that context that, you know, we often make that point that say something as simple as around Brexit, where the morning after the Brexit vote, it became quite clear to people around, I know in Ireland that we went, oh my God, this will net, they've done this thing to take back their borders and it's leading to us. It's going to lead to the breakdown of the British state in effect. And this is similar to that. The more we push back on Israel, the more likely they are to say we are the Jewish state and we are this state. It's important to ask you, we have a very small Jewish population in Ireland. I think off air you told me it's about 2,000 people.
About that, yes. I'm actually glad you, I meant to bring it up at the start, but for yourselves and for those listening, you know, we're at a very critical point in Irish politics and history right now. Now, we've, after decades, broken the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael duopoly that's dominated this country. And yes, you folks who have run a great informative podcast, informing the Irish public, have deemed it important enough to talk about anti-Semitism, even though not just like racism and prejudice in general, but this specific prejudice against a group of people, of which there are only about 2,000 in the country. And those of you listening, I'd invite you to maybe think about why you think that is. That is, maybe pause and write it down and then compare your answer to the end. But why do you two think?
Why do I think there's only 2,000?
No, why do you think we're talking about this?
Why do you think we decided to have this conversation?
Oh, I am having this conversation because I've seen it come up, particularly during the election or post-election. And, with somebody with very limited knowledge of the Jewish community in Ireland, and I'll be really honest about it. I don't know what the views of the Jewish community in Ireland is. So I'm quite interested to find out. How you feel about the whole thing. Particularly the way it's being used at the moment. I think context is everything in this. And I think we need to be more nuanced about our responses to what we're hearing.
Mm-hmm. Great answer. Thank you.
I would believe, and I've said this before, that Ireland has got a troubled past with our Jewish community. Mm-hmm. I think we don't really talk much about our past when it comes to whether it's trauma for women and trauma for other communities, traveller communities and the likes. And then the second thing I think that's important that hasn't been brought to bear is that we've seen, sadly, I think over the, in several instances politically, not just in Ireland, but only recently in Ireland, anti-Semitism has been effectively weaponized, to use for political gain, where I think there's bad faith players who aren't really engaging correctly. And I think, and again, from a personal level, I just want to inform myself better.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that was a lovely answer as well. Thank you very much. And so I hope the reason why I'm talking about why it's very important will be made clear as the podcast goes on, and maybe at the end you can revisit your answer and think about it.
But you wrote a thread, okay? You put together a thread. Now, what was good about the thread was that you balanced everything. You understood that someone maybe says something and doesn't understand the echoes of what that phrase means, or what the connotations of or origins of that were. You didn't judge. you simply said there are issues there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If they were to be educated, or you were to sit down with this person, and you did it in a good faith manner of said, if I could sit down and have a cup of coffee with you, I gladly would.
Yeah.
Is that what's missing from the discourse?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, if you've paid at all attention to the discourse on anti-Semitism, either in the UK, especially, but also in the US, over the last 3 years, I think about what have you actually learned about anti-Semitism from all this. So I'd wager very little, despite it being constantly in the news.
The only thing you've learned from it is that it's very bad to be called it.
Which I'd agree with. Yeah, yes, but that's a limited.
Terrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah. We should understand what it is and why we should actually face up to it and challenge it correctly, not just use it as a.
I suppose what I find confusing is that, from my very limited view of it, is that those who in the non-Jewish community who are accusing are generally to the right of politics. And I find that very confusing. I know there's anti-Semitism on both sides, but it seems to have been weaponized. Like even Bernie Sanders has been called an anti-Semite, and Bernie Sanders, I mean, I just can't believe that he is. And it's confusing. You know, how can Bernie Sanders be an anti-Semite? It just confuses me.
Yeah, well, I'd like to preface the answer with, like, look, Bernie Sanders is not an anti-Semite, but like the fact that he is Jewish isn't really a defense against that directly. Like, you can absolutely be Jewish and spread anti-Semitism.
Of course, yeah.
Although Bernie isn't. I think your point goes to something I saw someone who very commonly, the name escapes me, but there's someone who's criticized anti-Semitism on both the left and the right. A person in the US, and they say, you know, when I criticize, the left for being anti-Semitic, it's like a red carpet is rolled out for me. Everyone wants to talk to me. My quotes appear in all sorts of high profile places. Everyone wants to get it out there as an issue. When I criticize the right for being anti-Semitic, I get nothing, crickets. Crickets. Maybe like a few like small scale left places will do it, but it's much harder to get that message everywhere. And like this is something like this is classic Noam Chomsky manufacturing consensus stuff where like it's not that there's like a deliberate conspiracy in the media. It's that the people working within the media, like, they wouldn't have those specific positions if they weren't, you know, already predisposed to give much greater attention to it happening on one side than the other.
It's self-editorializing. We see it in many regards of how stuff is reported, and it is very much a case like you only have to look at even some of the more famous cases recently in a broader sense of the likes of Ronan Farrow and his case, and how no one wanted to talk. They knew, but everybody was like, oh, you know, can you bring us some of these stories and not that story? Stop bringing us back that story.
Yeah.
And he kept coming and he kept coming. Eventually he was hounded out, but he was right. And it's the same when you mentioned the UK and you mentioned the US, you know, did the British Labour Party have to deal with cases of anti-Semitism? Absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt. But that doesn't mean, you know, that's not, but I suppose, it's not just them. It's a much wider conversation that we should be having, not just about, you know, is Jeremy Corbyn stronger on anti-Semitism? And if Jeremy Corbyn only get his house in order, anti-Semitism would go away. Am I right?
I think it's actually kind of the same kind of delusion as the idea that, like, oh, before Brexit, there was no racism in the UK, when you had, like, Theresa May as Home Secretary sent around, like, go home billboards into minority communities. And we have the same idea, that there was no anti-Semitism in Labour before Jeremy Corbyn. No, there's always been anti-Semitism in Labour. Like what I say is, look, it's not the fact that the left or Labour have an anti-Semitism problem. Society has an anti-Semitism problem. And so obviously the left is going to be implicated in that as well. What I think is interesting is that most large-scale studies of anti-Semitic attitudes in society, they find it, overall rates are about the same, in terms of percentages on the right and the left, but there is one difference in that on the left, it's like a pretty parallel on the spectrum. Mm. Like if you're like a Sock Dem or a communist, it's about the percentage chance of you having antisemitic views are about the same. Whereas on the right, it's very much a scale where it's pretty uniform on the center right, but then you get further along, it goes up, 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 and there's the fact that anti-Semitism is very much very intertwined with far right ideology, which I think hopefully we'll get to discuss a bit more.
I think we should go there now. I mean, we had them.
You want to go there now?
We had the march in Charlottesville chanting "Jews will not replace us." Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. It's completely embedded. One person, I wish I could remember his name, but can you guys add essays and links to
your
notes?
Yes, of course we can. Yeah.
Great. I'll send it on to you for edition. But a black activist in the US, you called antisemitism the intellectual core of white supremacy. It's very much built in. And as for why, I'd like you both and you at home to think from this. Like, imagine you're like, you're a white supremacist, if you can stomach it.
Okay, I can see you, Martin.
So, imagine you are, and you're living in the world, like the US or elsewhere, and you're seeing all these people you hate, black people, gay people, trans people, because, you know, anti-LGBT is very much baked into white supremacy as well. You're seeing all these people continually self-organize for their rights and win, and then eventually, like, one of them actually becomes the president of your country. Now, I think if your entire worldview and sense of self is based on the idea of black people and white people, white superiority, white supremacy, how do you deal with that? How are you going to, like, psychologically keep your worldview intact in the face of all these people you consider inferior continuously self-organizing and winning and achieving pretty fantastic things? Like, how are you going to deal with that?
Well, you've got to have an organizing conspiracy theory, which is the guy sitting there with the white cat and he's rubbing it. There's a bad guy at the top of the chain. So the bad guy funds everybody else.
Yes, absolutely. So that's where anti-Semitism come in. As I mentioned at the start, it works differently to other forms of racism. It's instead of tearing down Jews and Jewish ability and power, it builds them up to these ridiculous heights. All right, so that's where you come in. They say, oh no, these people aren't winning themselves. It's the Jews doing this. It's the Jews making people gay and trans. It's it's the Jews, running around. Organizing black people and making them uppity and rowdy. Mm. Like, it's a very common belief in white supremacist circles that if we could just get rid of the Jews, we won't have any of this trouble with black civil rights activists anymore. And I suppose we'll talk about George Soros at some point. But I think it's interesting that in the US anyway, the point where George Soros' conspiracism became really big was right after the Ferguson riots in 2015, which were the start of the Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah, that was a point where they really got going on, it's George Soros behind all this, because otherwise they'd have to contend with all these black people making the very, you know, reasonable argument that police should probably stop shooting us.
Now, Soros accusations is something that have really, really crept into Irish discourse, particularly on social media. And it is something that has been leveled at us. It's leveled at, you know, pretty much anybody who works on the left.
We had J.K. Devitt in from Transparency Ireland, and they have to fund themselves, and they've taken money from various sources. And because at one stage you got a couple of hundred quid from one of the Open Democracy?
That's right.
Open Democracy based on the Open Society idea.
And immediately all of their work is invalidated that they do it for transparency and for keeping, you know, letting us have access to information that we need to have. It's all supposed to be invalidated because George Soros.
It is something that I get quite regularly. It's thrown at me quite regularly. Now, I generally reply taking the piss out of them.
Yeah, well, no, I want to come in on that.
I wanted to ask this.
I want to come in because it's important we say this, okay? First of all, we don't get any money from George Soros, and we need you to go to patreon.com.
I'm Jewish, so I don't get my checks directly. I sit on the board, and I'm paid on commission by how many Catholic girls become lesbians.
But the way and that's kind of how we reply to it, is take the piss out of it.
Is
that the right way to deal with it? Because it is an anti-Semitic trope.
I think it's a question of intent. Like, if you, and whether the person is aware, do you think this person would be aware of their spreading anti-Semitism, and do you think they'd be upset? But yeah, like say, like your aunt shares like a George Soros thing on Facebook, and she's never really displayed like racism, anti-Semitism before. I think in that situation, the best thing would be to just message her directly. Try talk to her, explain what the issue with it is why and why it's nonsense. And in that case, which is why one of the reasons I think anti-Semitic education is important, so that's like out in the public when you see your friends or your relatives start to share the stuff without realizing it has anti-Semitic connotations, that you can actually explain to them what it is and why it's not. But we see it out in the wild with pretty obviously bad faith actors who probably though not always are trying to believe in like quite anti-Semitic conspiracies. Yeah, you're perfectly welcome to just take the piss out of them. I've locked them. Whatever.
Well, I'm glad, because that's the way I deal with it.
Whatever.
But in Ireland, we're not immune. We have quite influential, there's regular columnists who are affiliated with, what I would call Christian fundamentalist, organizations. And many of them have got links that would make me, you know, raise an eyebrow at very least. When you open your newspaper and we're referencing some of these things, and these views are on the rise. There's no question they're on the rise.
Let's go straight there, Tony. You did a thread.
Well, I'd like to actually mention something a bit more about source, if that's okay.
Yes.
Just that it ties into a long history of anti-Semitic figures going back to the Rothschilds. But BuzzFeed did a very good article. I think, if you'd like to, you should share in the notes about, but it goes through the George Soros's of history. This is the modern Jewish boogeyman, boogeyman who is in a long line of tradition going back to like the Rothschilds, for instance. And funny enough, the people who started this, George Birnbaum and Arthur Finkelstein, who are both, interestingly, are both Jewish, or the Irish, have openly admitted in interviews that it was always nonsense. It was always a cynical electoral ploy. It's like, these are people who've worked on the campaigns of Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and Netanyahu in his first presidential election in 1995.
Wow.
Where the George Soros stuff comes in, is in Viktor Orban's re-election campaign, where they needed like some external enemy to blame the country's problems on, because otherwise he'd lose. So these two advisors said blame this Hungarian billionaire George Soros, and it turned out to be quite effective. And so this inspired quite a few copycats all over the world. Suddenly other cynical actors started doing the same aim, which, as I said, because it's an electoral strategy that you has a history of success leading up to, as I said earlier, the 2014 Ferguson riots, which is where it took off in the US. And what I would say is that the people doing this, the people accusing George Soros of all this stuff, I don't think most of the people at the top really believe it. I think they think they know what they're doing. They know about the anti-Semitic connotations. They know how people are going to take it, and they are cynically manipulating that. People who run like a lot, they're like billionaires, like the Mercers. Mercers, for instance, are News Corp, who make like nods and whistles to it. They know full well the history of this thing. They know how it's going to be interpreted.
They funded Bannon at one stage, didn't they?
The Mercers? Yes, yeah. They funded Bannon and Breitbart, and quite a few other far right stuff. They would allow us to be also, they also fund like Cambridge Analytica.
Yes.
Lytica and help get Trump and Brexit over the line.
I think it's really good that you break it down like that because it shows that it's a cynical ploy.
I liked your phrase, cynical actors. I think that for me is trying to figure out, particularly in Irish politics, who are the cynical actors in Irish politics? And that's really what your thread was about. It was about who are the genuinely cynical actors in Irish politics or in Irish media. And that's why your thread so appealed to me. It was so nuanced. It so got to the point, really, really, very, very quickly got to the point. So you understood that there are bad faith players playing in bad faith. Mm. There are other players who, I don't know what's the best word. They're not bad faith. They're badly informed or badly understanding, but not necessarily bad faith players. They're not trying to leverage anti-Semitism as a tool for politics. Mm.
Yes, absolutely.
Am I right about that? That was what the thread basically.
That's what it was about. Yes. I mean, the whole thing that inspired us was like a story accusing someone of anti-Semitism in part from like a singular retweet from like eight years ago. And you know, you can argue this person should have been aware of this. They should have been aware of the anti-Semitic connotations. But the fact is, if they really believed wholesale in this Rothschild Jewish bankers control the world stuff, they'd, like, there'd just be a lot more examples to back it up than like one thing that happened eight years ago. Mm. Go, if they, you know, they'd be a lot more dog whistles and nicks and winks and nods. And also there's the fact that like, what I'd say is that the people who really believe in the stuff, common trend is eventually they are caught out. They slip up in some way, which, and interestingly enough, we've seen quite a few people on the Irish far right. Screw up from time to time and share things which I guess name the Jews, so to speak, which they could say explicitly, Jews are running the show.
And that's it. There are, sadly, publications in Ireland that are set up.
You can call them publications, but the site that first shared that story, is historically, and it's not there that long, far more anti-Semitic than the people they are accusing of being anti-Semitic. And that for me was the greatest worry of all, is that it's drawing eyes to people who are trying to manipulate people into anti-Semitism. And that for me was more dangerous, far more dangerous, that they were given credence by a mainstream media.
Absolutely. I think in Ireland, people's relationship with anti-Semitism is either for the most part, they don't really know about us. They don't really understand us. So when they see things like that, they'll have one or two, I think the two bad reactions to have are one you see on the center, which is, oh dear, this is anti-Semitism. We have to report on this. We have to take this seriously. Mm. And which allows them to be like led by the nose by these cynical actors. But then another reaction, which you see much more on the left, are people who are very used to seeing cynical accusations thrown around, especially like in defense of the state of Israel. Mm. Israel, who have this knee-jerk reaction to automatically say definitely anti-Semitism. This is a bad faith tactic. I'm not going to deal with this. Like often the same people who say things like, "Oh, anti-Semitism isn't a real thing because you know other people are Semites too." And the only real solution to that, because the discourse is pretty maddening. It's complicated, okay, and nonsensical a lot of time. And the only really way to like not go insane from this stuff is to learn about what anti-Semitism is and isn't, so you can differentiate for yourself how to deal.
And we can't just continue to say that, you know, the Palestinians were Semites as well, or these. I know. There's origins of how we talk about where the Semitic people come from, but like anything else, there are Jews from Africa, there are Jews from, you know, and they, it's become, as you said, the word has evolved to not carry the full meaning of what it meant maybe a couple of hundred years ago. You could have just said Jew-hating, as you were saying, or Judeophobic, I believe was the expression you used. And now when we look at it, we just say we recoil because people naturally in Ireland, there is on the left as you yourself pointed out, Jacob, a dedication to justice, equality, and, you know, and solidarity with the right for those things to access those for the Palestinian people. We have to understand that that is not anti-Semitic. It's just actually shared values. But at the same time, we also have to understand that any accusation of somebody of anti-Semitic we should look at ourselves before we automatically jump to the whole, well, look, you're just smearing me for the sake of it, especially if you're talking to someone like yourself who knows what you're talking about. A few notes here. Obviously, we were talking about what the reaction to Rita Cronin. Rita has been, in effect, driven off Twitter, and she's a newly elected TD. You made a very good, interesting point. If you're looking at someone over the fullness of, you know, 6 years of tweets. And
8 years. It was from 2012, I think, nearly.
So 8 years, and there's only one red flag. I suppose we can inform ourselves and hope that we can, everybody, if we're to do that, everybody has screwed up, I guarantee you. I think that's fair to say. Everybody has made mistakes.
Well, like, that wasn't the thing. That was the only, like, Rothschild's anti-Semitic conspiracy. There was other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There was the Mossad stuff she was talking about, which is another issue on the left. I think probably the most common anti-Semitic view you encounter on the left and in social justice circles is the idea that, like, Israel has this incredible overreaching power over the politics and media.
The Israeli lobby as well would be
the Israeli lobby, which I don't think is even really accurate. Like in the US anyway, since most of the funding of that these are like US organizations, they're not Israeli. It's like you call it a pro Israel lobby, I think is more much more accurate and vastly better than Jewish lobby, which for God's sake never call it that. But these are American institutions and I think a lot of people get the power relationship exactly backwards. They think, like, these other countries and their media systems are subservient to Israel, when it's much more accurate to say, like, Israel is a client state of the US. It's basically a giant military base and strategic foothold, within the Middle East, which is very good for carrying out, US interests. So in that region. And it is worrying that I have to say the same things to the left as I say to, like, the neo-Nazis who sometimes come after me, who say, oh, Israel controls everything. Why would all these people fund them? I'm like, come on, man. Do you have any idea how international, like, power relationships actually work?
But is that an extension of the Soros character, the Jewish boogeyman? Is that an extension of that Israel controls rather than Israel is controlled? Is that kind of just more of that narrative?
Is that more of that narrative? I think it can be, because we're currently at a very strange time in the history. It's a very strange time to be Jewish and to be talking about anti-Semitism, because you've got some of the most pro-Israel people are themselves anti-Semitic, in a lot of cases. One thing I think about quite a bit is Richard Spencer, that American neo-Nazi. He's being asked by a rabbi, you have all these bad views about Jews, and yet what you want, a lot of things you want, it looks a good bit like Israel. And then he says, he responds, no, you don't understand. I support Israel. Well, I'm very supportive. I also think, like, a conversation I had, just before one of the anti-hate speech protests, I was talking to one of the attendants, trying to talk a little sense into them. And one thing they said to me was, he knew I lived in Ireland, but he said, you are a guest in our country. You have your own country to go to. So at that stage, it kind of fits in a lot with the idea of, like, you know, global ethno states, Ireland for the Irish, Israel for the Jews, such and su- It's like I think there's a non-zero percent chance that, like, the US president, Trump, literally believes that every Jew he meets is actually just a citizen of Israel. Israel just kind of living there. Cause he you've had all these things where, like, he's speaking to a group of Jews. He says, "Your prime minister, Netanyahu, are saying that, like, if they vote for this other party who is less
disloyal."
Yeah. Jews who vote for Democrats are disloyal because they're not being loyal, which is interesting because, like, one of the worst things you can accuse someone of, a Jew of being, is like having dual loyalty to being loyal to another country. It's like a known anti-Semitic trope. And yes, you have this case of the US president saying you should have dual loyalty
in front of a conference.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously Trump, and this is Trump himself, who knows why he really thinks. I think one of my favorite the best theory that's come up with is by this journalist who said Trump believes all negative stereotypes about Jews because he believes all negative stereotypes about all people. But in the case of Jews, he thinks they're positives. he thinks they're admirable. But, you know, it's not just him. You've got a lot of quite scary far right people, Viktor Orban, Jair Bolsonaro, people who have cynically manipulated anti-Semitism to get elected, also being quite strongly pro-Israel, wanting to ape their policies and basically do what they're doing to Palestinians to minorities.
And Viktor Orban for a minute, I will say, I mean, he's not just anti-Semitic, he's anti-Muslim, very nationalist, extremely nationalist person. But he's also a member of the EU, sits in the EPP party in the EU. That's the party that voted to not save people in the Mediterranean, which is, and our own politicians here in Ireland voted alongside this as well. So, I mean, these things have real world impacts. I mean, Viktor Orban has had huge real world impacts. So it's not just a sort of a theoretical thing. This costs lives.
It does, absolutely. I think that there's an interest, something interesting happened the other year was, Leo Varadkar publicly apologized for Ireland refusing to take in Jewish refugees during World War II. But then which is one of the reasons the community here is so small. But then this is the same Varadkar who, is keeping to the direct provision system, whose government is rejecting huge amounts of asylum claims. And yes, it does tie into the idea of everyone should have, like, this singular national homeland. And if you're not part of, like, the Volk, then you don't really have a place.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about, and again, the I'm going to call it, I hate using the word conspiracy, so I won't use it, but the Frankfurt School, the whole idea around it is based out of Marxism and a philosophy, but it's been bastardized and manipulated into an ideology. Do you want to explain a little bit about it?
Sure thing. I'm currently in the middle of writing a long form piece, exploring the history of it, which I don't think anyone has actually done yet. So, when that's done, maybe you guys could share it around.
Happy to.
Yeah.
The Frankfurt School of Critical Theory is basically, it's a school of philosophy. It's a group of, academics doing quite obscure academic work, which is quite interesting in its own right, even if a little dense at times.
Yeah.
But I think there's an interesting parallel between the evolution of this into a conspiracy and the protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was something that was proven almost immediately to be a complete fraud. But, when it was originally written, it was just this very obscure document that almost no one had heard of. Years and years later, it gets picked up, republished, and spread like just wildfire all over the place. And I think there's parallels there where the Frankfurt School, as far as I can tell, starts the conspiracy version anyway. Starts with this 1991 essay in this like quite obscure publication run by I think Lyndon LaRouche. This very quite strange American person. person, and then just remains in obscurity for until about 1998, when something which I haven't gone to the bottom of this, but there's something quite interesting happened where it pops up in two different places at almost this exact same time. This documentary called The Frankfurt School and Political Correctness, run by this guy called Lind, who was involved in a lot of right wing think tanks. Talking about the conspiracy we know today, where this obscure group of Jewish academics somehow created a blueprint for, like, taking over the world, over.
Cultural Marxism, then.
Yes, that's what it's called. Although that word is less used now, because the Nazi connotations, I think, have gone.
They have, yeah.
Gotten a little obvious, and I think what I should have said at the start is that, there's a lot of parallels, which there's something the Nazis talked about, which of cultural Bolshevism.
That's right,
are less dogmatically Judeo-Bolshevism, the idea that Jews were manipulating culture for the sake of, like.
We had Mark Malone on, and he spoke about it, how the evolution of the phrase from Bolshevism to Marxism, and it did hide, in a sense, anti-Judaism, anti-Jewish sentiments.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you would think things like there's these posters of, like, a black person blowing a saxophone and being like, "Oh, beware of Jewish music."
Yes,
music that Jews are creating, and which is the same thing today. They think that, like, these academics and Jews are behind, like, the cultural expressions of black people, which. It also ties into the thing I said earlier, like, you absolutely cannot give these minority groups credit for the brilliant artistic things they come out with. So you have to say it's part of the Jewish conspiracy, which is, you know, and then it's the same thing. They say it's in this document, in this 1998 documentary entry, which is that, like, political correctness and gay rights and things like that are directly come out of this thing. Of this school of academics, but weirdly, in the same year, a book called The Cultural Critique by a guy called Kevin MacDonald came out. A book which has arguably done more than a guy who has arguably done more than almost anyone else in recent history to spread anti-Semitism. Like, even a lot of far right white supremacist neo Nazis will say, "Oh, didn't really think about Jews that much until I read this book."
Yeah.
This book. And this book comes out in the same year as this documentary, both of which has a whole chapter on the Frankfurt School. And I haven't gone to the bottom of why this is, but it does seem very strange that this very obscure essay would then show up in these two places.
Simultaneously.
As I said, I haven't gone to the bottom of this. Why it is, but this book, The Cultural Critique, it's supposedly the book. It's between him and this other white, KKK guy, called like My Awakening, I believe. Those two books are like the books in the modern age for converting people to anti-Semitism. But in Kevin MacDonald's case, it was based directly on this obscure essay, and then years later, it gets picked up by people like Andrew Breitbart, and the likes who see their chance to cynically use it, just like they do with the George Soros stuff.
It's very interesting because it's also a cash cow for many people.
We call it fash for cash. That's what we call it, fash for cash.
And it is very successful for many people. And and as you said yourself, and what you've alluded to was very powerful. People need to understand that it's easier then to say, blame my failings on the Jew man, or whatever phrase you want to put on it, and say this how can this second generation black person be doing so well? Well, it must be to do with the Jews again, or whatever it is. I think it's really powerful, and again,
but we do have to be wary in Ireland of the connections of these international, these multinational connections between our own far-right groups and these other groups that exist all over the world. We do have to be very aware, and the individuals involved who are involved with far-right
some
groups.
Of are some people who ran recently in the general election traveled to Germany to stand side by side at neo-Nazi rallies.
Yeah.
This is not the stuff of fiction. This is true, and this is happening today, and it's happening now. And you know, if we're going to be honest about it, I'm so glad you agreed to come in on such short notice to have this conversation, because A, I'm learning more, I'm taking notes as we're going along, and it gives the listeners an idea that when they hear phrases like cultural Marxism or globalist or cabal and all, they have to understand the connotations of that. Like, we had Lenny Abramson in here, and Lenny spoke about his conflict in his not wanting to really know about his past and going in, wanting to know, you know, and exploring and seeing how great his grandparents were and all the things that they went through and then actually turned around going, God, I feel quite inadequate. And this is a guy who's been nominated for an Academy Award, you know.
Oh, don't tell you that. One of my great grandparents was the head rabbi in Prague.
Really?
Yeah. So in some ways, I'm like the heir to the golem of Prague.
Wow.
Prague. And yes, here I am, and I don't even speak Hebrew.
But I think it's important to you know, when we see anti-Semitic thrown out as an accusation, that we first understand why it is anti-Semitic. We also got to look at who's been accused, why they're being accused. But we also have to look at who's doing the accusing. If it's somebody and I like that phrase that you said, a cynical actor. If it's a cynical actor who gratuitously throws out anti-Semitism themselves constantly, well, then they're not a good faith actor in this. Even though what they're saying may be valid, they're still not a good faith actor in this. There's something else going on. That's difficult. That's difficult for anybody.
But what's more important is no religion, be it Judaism, Islam, Catholicism, should be a pawn to be used to or a ploy or a tactic. And to become this tactic now is just, it's dangerous. It is dangerous. We spoke about it in the UK. We spoke about it in the US, and we don't want to see these things emerge here. We'd like to think that we're much
well,
more
I
open
think,
country.
I think it is admirable of Irish society in general that if somebody is accused of being anti-Semitic, we take it seriously. And I think that is admirable of Irish society. We got to understand more about it, and it's great that you've come in to have this chat with us, and I think you haven't closed the conversation. I think you've opened a conversation that we're going to have to have more and more times, Tony. It's just something we're going to have.
Jacob, you are what's next for you?
What's next for me? I'm just going to continue talking about this, continue writing about this. About this. Yeah, and yeah, I'd like to address so I assume we're wrapping up. Great. So before we go, I think there's two more points I'd like to get through.
Please.
First is to your point of these like cynical actors manipulating anti-Semitism while being entailed in anti-Semitism themselves. I said at the start, you know, why are we talking about anti-Semitism when there's only 2,000 Jews in the country? Well, the inverse of that is, why do people have anti-Semitic beliefs when there's hardly any Jews in here? And if you look at like there's far-right conspiracy types, it's all stuff that's been imported from either the US, Europe, things like the Soros stuff, things like the idea that Jews are behind like white, like the myth of white genocides, like it's all taken from other places and imported here, because it isn't really like a natural anti-Semitism has never really developed in Ireland.
But it's creeping. YouTube and 4chan and these things, we're not immune.
We're not immune. Yeah. Yes. And I guess I'd say, If you're Cronin, get in touch with me. I'd love to talk to you. If Dave Quinn or Kavanaugh are listening to this, this, but I know maybe they do, maybe they hate. Maybe ask yourself why a lot of the people you associate, why these nasty connections just keep coming up.
Absolutely.
I mean, the publication you used to work for was churning out defenses of neo-Nazis and loads of white supremacists. Yes. The organizer of those anti-hate speech marches, she got in a bit of trouble because she applied thank you to this person who posted very blatantly anti-Semitic neo-Nazi stuff. The former presidential candidate turned social friar has shared article. At one point, has shared an article explicitly saying about a conspiracy known as the clergy plan, explicitly saying Jews are behind this, Jews like to exterminate white people. And like, the examples just keep popping up. And maybe have a seriously ask you, why does this keep happening? Like, it's not exactly difficult to avoid neo-Nazis in your day-to-day life. And if you really are concerned about anti-Semitism, I think that's great, and I would encourage that. But maybe take a look at what you can do about your own side as well, lads.
Yeah, that's a great point,
Jacob. Thank you so much for coming in and having this chat with us. It's been really informative.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thank you. I'm so glad.
And thank you for taking the time out to have this talk with us.
Sure thing. Oh, and one last point. I just want to quickly make. Thank you for letting me go on.
No,
on
about this.
Look, anti-Semitism is it's a lot of things, but and one. More than anything, it is a scam. Anti-Semitism is a scam run by cynical actors who want you focused on these phantom enemies, so that you will not notice the people who really have power and the people who really have bad intentions, that you will not notice what they're doing, what they're up to, and the fact that like the things they have you convinced of are almost the exact inversion of the truth. They want to give in to you. There's like a Jewish cabal funding like trans rights issues, when the reality is these same people are funding a global hate campaign trying to convince you to fear and hate trans people, gay people, black people. Everyone. If you believe in anti-Semitism, inside is no word for it. You're a sucker. You are being suckered by wealthy, powerful people. Which is more than anything else, the origin of anti-Semitism. That when powerful people screw up, or things aren't going well, or they're worried about their power being threatened, they want the people to blame someone else. Anyone else. They want you specifically to blame someone other than them for the problems. That is why anti-Semitism is so popular. That's why it's being fomented. And to finally answer the question is why it's so important and why I'm here talking about today.
Jacob Wolf, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I hope you all enjoyed that, folks, because I think that's a great lesson. And a great listen for all of us. And I hate to have to go there, but we do need people.
Thank you, Jacob. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I'll talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye bye.
Hi, folks. Small bit of housekeeping before we start the pod. As you may know, these pods rely on listeners' support. We continue to be pushing and trying to get you voices of people you won't hear from. But in order to keep it going, we need support. With a mind to that, we will be doing some more patron-only content. And if you want to avail of that, please come over to patreon.com/tortoiseshek. It will help us keep delivering the pods. And it will give us... we're simply not viable without your support. More importantly, Rory Hearn, the host of the Reboot Republic podcast, is running for the Shannon in the NUI panel. You can get information for that on roryhearn.ie. Rory, as you know, obviously is a good friend of ours and we're quite biased on that, but he would be a great advocate for the right to housing, fighting for equal pay, fighting for to tackle inequality. And he's a long-term activist. And I have to be honest with you, he's one of the most sincere and genuine people I've ever met. So maybe head over to roryhearn.ie, have a look at his GoFundMe. He could do with some support. Also, check out Rachel's newest podcast on Disturbing the Peace. It is on living with bipolar, and it's really fantastic. I have to say it helped me put a lot of things in context. What you're going to hear now is our conversation with Jacob Wolf and around the recent controversy around anti-Semitic comments and the global phenomenon of seeing it weaponized and what it is and what it isn't. And I have to say it was one of my favorite episodes we've done. Talk to you all soon.